That's interesting too, because with capitalism, this form of economic system also encourages destruction of nature, use of natural resources to provide products for people. So railing against the military is doubly beneficial in that regard. So you mentioned austerity as a reaction to the recession. And right now on Wall Street, there are thousands of people protesting. I believe it's because of these austerity measures. I would like to get your opinion just about these protests. And also, I noticed that in the Canadian media, in our main newspapers at least, that there's very, very, very little media attention paid to them. And I was just wondering if it's the same in the States, or if it's garnering a little bit more attention.
Well, I'm sorry to say it's covered not particularly well in the U.S. either, which perhaps isn't surprising, since demonstrations tend to be, unless they're the Tea Party, they tend not to get a great deal of media coverage, or at least in the mainstream media. But about the protests, well, I think they are great. People are taking inspiration from people in Cairo and people in Spain in terms of occupying public space to draw attention to what's going on. And, I mean, the austerity itself is, I have to say, it's so ridiculous because it runs entirely against mainstream economic, you know, conventional wisdom from not left-wing economists, but mainstream economists, which is that if there's a recession, the government needs to spend money. It needs to put money into people's pockets so that they can spend money and get the economy going. So whether it's through public works or whatever, but this is a way that economies, capitalist economies, have historically used to get out of economic crises. And what's happening is just the opposite. You know, the government has control over employment in the public sector, government jobs, and those are the jobs that have been cut so very severely in the United States. And so while the austerity has been a response to the 2008 meltdown, it's been it may seem like a very illogical one. On the other hand, if one does really understand what's going on, as very much an attempt by elites to further restructure economic power to the benefit of the rich, then this does make sense. But they're really playing with a loaded gun here, too, because, as I say, it looks like they're tipping the economy right back into recession, and that can hurt their bottom line as well.
Another thing I'd like to get your opinion on, or just make a statement about, is how governments will often renegotiate debts whenever those debts are with wealthy partners. But because we have acquired all this debt, and now it's the onus of the taxpayers, of the people, to, like, it becomes increasingly, in this situation, it becomes all of a sudden really important to pay off these debts instead of rather than renegotiating them. And why that's really interesting is because our current capitalist system relies on a form of currency that is very ephemeral, and that we can wipe out or pass on trillions of dollars with a matter of like a mouse click. And I don't know, I guess maybe your thoughts on that.
Well, sure. I mean, what was seen with the economic crisis is that debts in the corporate sector can be, you know, as you say, sort of just wiped out. But the debts that then get taken on by the government, shifted over, then have to be paid off, and the people have to pay them. I mean, if you look at, obviously right now the European economies are in real crisis, but if you look at the Irish government, they had a housing boom in the run-up to the economic crisis. All sorts of people in high places encouraged that housing boom. When the bubble burst, the banks were left with all this debt. And rather than having the bank go under, the government took over that debt. So Ireland didn't have debts to start with in any significant way, but it ended up taking on all of these debts from the private sector. But then the people who were then asked to pay for these debts, to eliminate the debts, were actually the population of Ireland. So it got shifted from the private sector to the public sector, essentially. And so all of a sudden in Ireland, they started slashing spending, and they created you know, very high unemployment through these actions. So it's really, these questions are political questions, and they're questions of who those in power decide should pay. And I think it's all of the job of all of us to say, no, you know, we're not going to pay. It's you who need to pay here. But so far, there hasn't been, I mean, there have been quite inspiring protests that has burst out all around the world. And the Arab Spring was one example, obviously. Wisconsin here in the United States was another. But so far, social movements haven't been able to organize themselves enough to be able to say no. But I do think that's what we need to be aspiring to.
And maybe asking these questions or engaging with these discourses which exist in your book. I have another question to do with the creation of the book, more a little bit of a less political question here. Many of the interviews that are included in the publication were taken from interviews that you conducted over several years for the radio broadcast Against the Grain. Was it a difficult process to transform these radio broadcasts into a publication? Was there a lot that you omitted or had to try to fit in?
Well, clearly the spoken word, the way we speak, is not how we write. And so to transform how people speak into something that's easy to read, you know, it's just the challenge anyone faces in dealing with transcriptions. What I did was, yes, a number of the interviews in the book had their origins as interviews on Against the Grain, but then I, after transcribing them, then fleshed them out with the interviewee later, asking them questions, expanding them, and so on. So a lot of work went into each one. My hope is that the interviews and the book serve as an accessible way for people to get a handle on some, you know, at times fairly complex ideas about economics, but also about resistance as well. And because I really firmly believe that it's to the detriment of those of us who identify as radicals that economics can seem like something that we can't touch, or it seems inaccessible and too complex, when in fact, you know, these are things that very much shape all of our lives. And so my hope, and I think, you know, thanks to my interviewees rather than myself, the interviews themselves, I think, are quite clear and accessible and hopefully will be useful to people as a tool for action.
I agree. There's also, you were speaking about allowing yourself to get into economics, not being afraid of approaching economics. There's been a number of other books over the years approaching economics in a very friendly way, but there has been fewer approaching from like a leftist perspective. So it's really great to have this book that approaches economics from this leftist perspective. And it's also interesting the way that the book is divided up. You divide it up into three parts, sort of three loose themes, with one looking at empire and part two exploring the different aspects of capitalism, including commodification, enclosure, and sort of the inherent contradictions within capitalism, and part three, looking into alternatives. Were these natural themes that sort of developed as you looked at the interviews?
Well, I think some of them developed fairly naturally in that I'm very interested in my radio work in both trying to analyze the problem and then also talk about resistance. So, and that's the discontents of the title, Capital and Its Discontents. But in terms of the first two sections, looking at the crisis seemed very important, but then stepping back and saying, outside of this immediate crisis, how do we understand the system of capitalism? And so that actually includes interviews with people about understanding capitalism in nature and its how capitalism transforms nature. There's an interview which I'm particularly pleased with in the book, in that section, by someone who's not so well known in the U.S. She's actually a British socialist feminist called Ursula Hughes, and she talks about how capitalism constantly commodifies and how throughout the history of capitalism, much of what gets turned into commodities, something that can be bought and sold, comes out of women's unpaid labor. So that's sort of one different facet in understanding capitalism. There's also interviews about the process of enclosure and dispossession and how often it's very racialized in the global south and elsewhere. And so, you know, it's a range of different perspectives and a range of different people. David Harvey is one of the people interviewed in the book about capitalism in crisis. Ellen Maxinswood discusses empire, and Noam Chomsky is in it in the discontents part, talking about libertarian socialism and what that would look like. So I'm hoping, anyway, my attempt was to cover a fair amount of ground. Obviously, it doesn't cover everything, and there are things that are missing. But in terms of trying to look at the system, if one could put it this way, looking at the system and then anti-systemic approaches, that was what was attempted.
It certainly does a very good job of accomplishing those goals.
Thank you. That's kind of you to say.
And I'm glad that you mentioned Ursula Hughes. She was one, a person who I wasn't familiar with, and wrote down her name as a, you know, someone to go back to and look up again. So there, it is a really good book for a diverse number of ideas. Now, we're rounding the end of the interview, I suppose, because I'm at the question where I ask you if you have any recommendations for readers to read to help them preserve and help promote progressive change. So a very general question.
There is, of course, one never knows what's in one's local library, and hopefully your local library is still open, given all the cuts. Certainly where I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, libraries are on the chopping block. But I guess one book I would recommend, maybe I'm thinking of it also because it is, well, one of the authors is included in my book, but also it has an interview format, and that is a book called Wobblies and Zapatistas, which was a conversation between Andrei Gribicic, who is a anarchist historian from the Balkans, a relatively young person who had was very active in the global justice movement and a very interesting thinker, a kind of intergenerational dialogue that he had with an old radical, Staunton Lind, about trying to think about politics and organizing around anti-capitalism today and bridging the gap between generations of the left. So that might be one book that's worth checking out. I also I would encourage people to check out In and Out of Crisis, which is a Spectre book, so, you know, full disclosure there, but by Leo Panitch and Sam Gindin and Greg Albo, who are all based at York University in Toronto. And it is it's actually quite a small book, but it's a really fantastic book for understanding both the economic crisis, and then they have some very interesting ideas around how to organize in a moment of crisis. So I guess I would recommend that book as well. I mean, there are so many thousands of worthy books out there. I'm afraid that's a pretty limited answer on my part.
No, that's fine. And it's fine that you mentioned the PM Press book, because that's what the imprint is for, right? Books that address radical thoughts on the political economy. What is next for the PM Press? What can people look forward to that's coming out from this imprint?
Well, I'm actually working on a book right now. It's a multi-authored book, so it's me and several other people. Eddie Ewan is one of them. It's a book on catastrophism. And catastrophism we sort of define as the politics around catastrophe, and also thinking that catastrophes might lead to positive social transformation. So essentially what we're arguing in the book is that we're living through a time which is undoubtedly catastrophic. I mean, the crisis of nature is, you know, without doubt a catastrophe, global warming. Obviously, we see the crisis socially, economically. But what we are basically arguing in this book is that there are some people who have fallen into thinking that a catastrophe will in itself mobilize people against the system and make people rise up, the scales fall from their eyes, and then they'll be able to see the system for what it is. And we are suggesting in this book that that tends to be faulty thinking, and that what can't be replaced and is really needed right now is organization, that we need to be able to organize ourselves, not in the traditional sectarian modes that unfortunately the left has fallen into, but that if we take these challenges seriously, it's really a call to action on our part. I mean, one of the things that has been so interesting in the United States, if you look back over the last decade, was in 2003, when it looked like the U.S. was going to invade Iraq. There was mass demonstrations, of course, around the world, but in the United States, where millions of people came onto the streets to oppose war. And then again, in 2006, there was the largest general strike in U.S. history, which was when immigrant workers all struck for a day. So people, you know, what we're seeing is people can be mobilized, but what is not happening is the building of sustained movements. And so what we're arguing is that really needs to be foremost on any kind of agenda of the left. And so hopefully this book will add to a discussion about that.
It sounds really interesting. I know that I'm excited for it to be coming out soon. If listeners wanted to support the PM Press or for more information, example, for upcoming books, can I ask you to give out the web address?
Yes, it's pmpress.org, and they have a fantastic thing called the Friends of PM, where you can basically become a subscriber. If you go to the website, you'll see there are different rates that people can subscribe at, but then you get a bundle of books every month or a bundle of DVDs every month of fantastic radical literature. So it's a wonderful way to sustain a radical publishing effort, and you get these terrific things showing up each month to sustain you and to pass along to your friends.
I love it. Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Sasha. It was really great.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.